Welcome to Woodshop Life Podcast, a bi-weekly podcast focused on the craft of
woodworking.
I'm Guy from Guy's Woodshop, and as always, I'm joined by my friends Hui Huynh and Brian.
Good evening, guys.
Good morning. Good evening.
Good day to you, sir.
Good day. Yeah.
So this podcast is intended to answer questions from the woodworking community and give you some of our perspectives on how we get things done in our own shops. We also have a Patreon account. Right now, we only have one level, and we're simply asking for a small donation just to try to cover the costs of bringing you this podcast. So please go to patreon.com/woodshoplife. And we'd like to thank our newest patron for their pledge, JG List. Thank you so much, and we sincerely hope the rest of you will give us your support. And stay tuned at the end of the show to hear about what we've got going on in our shops. So let's get right into it. Hui, you've got the first question.
All right. So this question is from Justin Alpino. Hi, fellas. I recently purchased a horizontal crown bit, and he references here the Yanico 16172 to apply a soft dimple to drawer faces on my tool cabinet. I will be recessing the drawer pulls within them. The challenge that I'm facing is that the drawer faces are a little small. They're about 5.5 inches by 3.25 inches. And without being overly creative on my work holding, I'm not seeing a safe way to plunge the face onto the bit in my router table or plunge the bit into the face with a handheld router. My plan is to chuck the bit into my drill press and use that to apply the cut. What experience, tips, or words of advice might you have in using a drill press with a router bit? I have a Grizzly G7643, which only spins up to 3,050 RPM. Thanks in advance, and for all that you guys do for our craft of woodworking, Justin. What he's talking about here is the Yanico 16172, this horizontal crown bit, is typically used to create like some type of crown molding that is mounted at a 45 degree angle, maybe to the corner of a room or, corner of a room around. So like for crown molding and whatnot. The issue that, or what he's trying to do is he's trying to create this like dish or this bowl, round dish or bowl. What I'm assuming is that he's trying to create this round dish or bowl in the center of these drawer faces, and then I suspect drill and then mount some type of drawer pull, whether it be a metal drawer pull or something that he's turning on the lathe or the drill press itself. I don't see a problem with trying what he's attempting to do here and testing it out. My concern is that the drill press spins quite slow. So as you know, as you get larger and larger router bits in your router table, typically what you want to do is you want to step down that RPM or the router speed so that you can get proper chip ejection and so that you reduce burning and things like that. In this case, 3000 RPM is about a third of the speed that you need on a router table. The router table with that size of bit needs to be around 10,000 RPM, maybe 12,000 RPM. So this is really, really slow. So if you're going to try this, keep in mind, you're probably not going to get proper chip ejection. Secondly, the router bit is at a totally different cut angle. Those carbide tips are at a totally different cut angle, more like a shearing action than a cutting action that you might get from like a Forstner bit. If you ever look at a Forstner bit, you've got the outside cutters, and then inside you've got these like sort of scooped angled blades that are ejecting the wood vertically away from the surface. So what you're going to get is, I think you're going to get a lot of tear out. I think it's going to be very slow going. I don't know if it poses a danger, like, hey, don't do this. This is really bad. I just don't know because I've never tried it. I'm kind of telling you that you kind of need to test it and try it because I guess what I'm saying is that me personally, I would not do that. I would probably find a way of holding that workpiece or oversizing the workpiece so that it was easier to hold, and then plunging with a handheld bit, handheld router, and somehow holding that router and sort of keying it into the center of the drawer every single time. So I think this is more of a jig, creating a jig situation, than it would be going the drill press route. I don't know if this poses any danger. Brian, Guy, does this pose any danger to doing it on the drill press? I just don't know.
I'm not sure if there's any danger on the drill press, but your point is a good one, that if his drill press only spins up to 3000 RPM, that's way too slow, is my guess, for a bit that's designed to run at a, you know, minimum of, or recommended speed of probably 10 to 12,000 RPM.
Yeah.
I don't love the idea of doing that on the router table, only because you've got a really big diameter bit. It's a 2 7/16 diameter.
Two
and three quarter inch diameter bit. And your workpiece is, what did he say? 3 1/2, 3 1/4 inches.
Well, I don't mean to interrupt. I think the diameter of the bit is actually 1 7/8, but the diameter of the dish of the cove is close to 2 7.
Well, I'm looking at the bit online, and it says 2.7 inches.
Yeah.
Oh, well, if that's the case, then that's a big bit.
So I don't like the idea of doing that at the router table, especially because you've got a short piece of wood, so you don't have a whole lot of space to reference down and kind of support that. I would build a jig to kind of house your router in and to set your piece down into, and make a simple, you know, plunge and swipe, and then you're done. And you've got it stopped at the beginning and end, and you can just take all of these commonly sized drawer faces and do it, you know, with your plunge router. But I would capture that workpiece inside the jig so that there's absolutely nowhere for it to go left or right or up or down, and then build your stops around that.
Guy, have you ever done any of these sort of recessed backs on drawer fronts for drawer pulls at all?
No.
And no. Okay.
No. This is a really big bit, so it's really heavy, and I doubt the drill press has enough speed or torque to drive that bit through wood and actually do anything with it. It's probably just going to spin, hit the wood, and then stop. The belts will slip, all kinds of weird things. It's not designed for it. Don't use a crescent wrench as a hammer. Use a hammer. So in this case, I'd recommend using a router for the router bit. I know that sounds weird, but it's also a really big bit. So you're going to need a 3+ horsepower motor to spin that thing.
Yeah.
Using a 1 3/4 horsepower motor on it, it will spin it. I don't know how efficient it's going to be. You might run into some issues, but it needs a lot of horsepower to spin that bit. And it does need to spin it at about 10,000 RPM. If it were me, I'd just put it in my CNC. But if you don't have a CNC, and I've been thinking about this as you and Brian and we were talking about the how to even do it on a router table, it would be tough. You'd have to plunge it down. You'd have to put stops on the router table in the trailing and the leading edge, and push it down, move it, and then pick it up at the end. And that's, man, I don't know. It could be
that's
done.
That's dangerous. Yeah.
It could be done. Right. I don't even know if you need a jig. You just need to set up your router table properly and do multiple passes.
Let me ask you this again, because he's only, I believe he's only trying to make like some type of round dish, right? Like he's not trying to actually make like a cove, which is what you would do to run it through. If he were to hold the workpiece and clamp it down to his router table and get it all lined up and everything, right? The workpiece is clamped down, and he had a router lift, and he powered that sucker up, zeroed it out, and knew how high to lift it, and slowly.
Well, as long as the lift mechanism isn't covered up by the board that's on the router table.
Yeah. I bet with it only being 3 1/4 inch wide piece, I bet the lift, the adjustment would not be covered.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's right. I see what you're talking about. Yes.
I don't, man, like I said, I would, if it were me and I didn't have the CNC, I would probably look at another way to do it.
Yeah.
or look at a different design, or I would just create a stop on the in and out of the table.
Yeah,
that's a big.
And you would have to get a big handle on top of the wood that keeps your hand about 3 to 6 inches away from the table, and maybe like double side tape it. Or if this is going to be the front, you could screw it into the back. You could have a big push block just attached to it where you just plunge it down, push it, lift it off.
Yeah.
Raise the bit a little bit.
To do that with.
Yeah, it's a big bit. And he's trying to do something that's really not designed to do. That's not designed to dish something out. It's designed to add an edge profile.
No, it is actually designed. When you read about it on precisionbits.com, it does talk about it being able to create crater-like indents and can be used.
It's able to do that, but it's not. I still wouldn't use it.
Yeah,
I don't know if it's.
Well, I think to be fair, that is the right bit for what he's trying to do. At least based on the description online, talks about using it for coin trays, Mancala game boards, and other interesting projects. So. It can create a profile. It can cut through that profile, but it can also be used within the workpiece to create that niche out. So
I don't know, man.
There's a few options there. I was under the impression that he was going to be moving the board through to create an elongated dish. But as I reread the question, it says he's just trying to apply a soft dimple to the drawer face and recess the drawer pull within that. I think actually the recommendation to clamp to the table, to the router table, and with access to the router lift, just gently raise that into it. If he's really just trying to, guy shaking his head.
No, just attach something to the back of it, put a stop at the trailing and the leading edge, turn the router on, plunge it down, move the piece, take it off.
Yeah, yeah. I'm saying, though, I don't think he needs to move the piece. I think he's trying to create a circular dimple. He's not trying to create an elongated oval dimple. That's the only difference.
That's how I took it.
Yeah.
Okay. I didn't take it.
There's a lot to digest for the listeners there.
Well, Justin, I hope that helps. We just don't think that the drill press is going to be fast enough to do that. I don't think, and also have the torque that you need. I was mistaken. You guys are absolutely right. It is a 2 3/4 inch diameter router. That's a monster bit. That's a big bit. Big bit.
Might not even fit in his router table.
Might not. Yeah. Yeah. I don't think it would fit in mine. That's quite big, but all right. Off to you, Brian.
All right. This question is from Parker. And Parker has a bandsaw question. He said he's curious about the Laguna bandsaw that Guy used at work. Longtime listeners of this podcast could easily believe that Laguna bandsaw tables are at knee height and unusable. But I have a Laguna 1412 and the table is at 35 inches, which seems really normal, and I'm pretty tall. All the other Laguna saws I've seen or been around seem about in the same range. Is this not normal? Is Guy freakishly tall? Or an advocate of chest-height bandsaw tables? Well, one, Parker, great question. As a longtime listener of the podcast myself, I resonate with that comment about believing, you know, listeners may believe that Laguna bandsaw tables are at knee height. And I think there are a couple of times where that came across. I was like, wow, they sound like they're really low. I'm tall. I'm 6'4". And a lot of that's in my legs. So I prefer a higher work surface for anything I'm doing. My workbench that I built last year is 39 inches tall. It's a couple inches taller than what most people might build at. So it looked like Laguna was in fact a few inches shorter than others. So when you look at that 14 inch bandsaw, the 1412 online, the spec sheet says 38, you commented yours is 35. So I'm not sure where that discrepancy is, but the Jet 14 inch bandsaw, one of the Jet 14 inch bandsaws that's commonly available is at a 40 inch table height. So a few inches taller. And then the Powermatic 14 inch bandsaw, actually came in at a 44 inch table height. So there does appear to be a variety of table heights available. I really like a higher table height for some of that detail work. I have just a 10 inch bandsaw that's up on a shop cart, and the table height there ends up being 48 inches with the cart that it's set on because it's just a benchtop version. And I really like that as a taller individual because I can be a little bit closer to the work. I'm usually not working with big, long pieces of lumber. It's usually smaller piece or part. And with the downward force of that bandsaw blade, I don't feel as bad getting, you know, up close to the table and really focusing in on the work. And at a taller height, it's much easier for me to do that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Guy, what model bandsaw are we running? Is it a 1412?
No. I think it's 14. No, it's not the 1412.
It's not the 1412. Okay.
No, it's like a 14 inch something.
Yeah, a little older.
Yeah, it's got like a 3-horsepower motor on it. It's one of their deluxe saws.
Okay.
I've got the Powermatic, and the bed height on that is over 40 inches. It's like 40, 41, 42, something like that. Mm-hmm. I had a Grizzly before that, and I had it up on casters.
Right.
And it was really high. It was probably, you know, 45, 46, because the casters had a couple inches. I'm not super tall either. I'm about 6'1", and
that's tall to me.
It just seems like every time I've gone up to that saw, it's just really low. And when I was looking to buy a saw before I bought the Grizzly, I looked at the Lagunas and I said, my God, these things are so, I mean, a couple 3 inches makes a big difference.
It's a big difference.
So I just didn't, I'm not disparaging the saw. Don't take it that way.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It's just short. I think it's short.
Mm-hmm. So I'm 5'7" on a good day with high heels. I'm 5'7" and I have the Grizzly, the same saw that Guy used to have.
17 inch, yeah.
Yeah, 17 inch Grizzly bandsaw. Mm-hmm. And that is also on casters, on rolling wheels. And I like that height. And I'm a short guy. So for whatever reason, I've become comfortable with that height. I could not imagine going to a Laguna with, you know, I mean, we're talking like 6, 7, 8 inches difference, right? That's a big difference from what I'm used to. And I think it depends on what you've become used to. I've become used to having my work pieces more towards my torso than around like my waist or my hips. And I couldn't imagine going to a Laguna with that low of a table. Now, again, I think it's all about your creature comforts and what you're used to. If that's what you're used to, and like Guy said, it's a perfectly fine bandsaw, then I think that's the one for you. I'm just so used to the Grizzly height that I have on my bandsaw that I couldn't imagine going to one that low.
We also have a 24-inch Grizzly at work.
Mm-hmm.
And the table height is about the same as Laguna.
That low, huh?
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And I think the that there's really no standard height or standard height that manufacturers are following for this. So, it's just what you like.
Yeah, personal preference.
All right, I guess the question goes to me.
Yep.
And this question comes from Ivan. Ivan says, "Hey guys, I'm new to woodworking and really enjoy listening to podcasts. I have a question. Would you guys be able to go over what you use 3/4, 4/4, et cetera, lumber? I often think you need thick lumber for projects. I don't have a project in mind, but I bought some rough sawn lumber that I plan on using for trim in the house. But I bought enough to have plenty left over." So really what the question is, I think, is, you know, why would you need 3/4, 4/4, 6/4, 8/4? And what should you buy? Most of the time when I'm buying rough sawn lumber, I'm buying 5/4. Mainly for the reason is that most of the stuff I'm making are between 3/4 and 1 inch thick. And that gives me enough to get rid of the rough sawn texture on both sides and get the board down to thickness that I want. Mm-hmm. As far as when you should use 3/4 inch and when you should use 7/8 and when you use 1 inch and when you use 1.5 inches, that really depends on the project. I mean, I look at something like the Bowfront buffet that I made. Mm-hmm. And I put the top on it and I made it 3/4 inch. It's way too thin. Every day I look at that thing and I go, oh my God, what the hell was I thinking? It should have been at least minimum 1 inch. You'd be amazed at visually what a 1/16 or 1/8 inch will make on a piece. And it's all a matter of proportion. And that's why I see a lot of designs are, you know, you'll see pieces that I said that are, you know, some are 1 inch thick and some are 3/4 inch and some are 1/2 inch. It really depends on what the part is and visually how it integrates into the rest of the project. Mm-hmm. I spent a lot of time on this at work and I'm actually hamstrung by the fact that everything has to be 1.5 inches. Mm. Everything we make is 1.5 inches. Tops, legs, everything is 1.5 inches.
Now Brian's over here shaking his head.
Brian can shake his head all he wants. I really don't care. I'm just saying everything has to be 1.5 inches, it seems like. And sometimes we make things and I put them in CAD and they're just really bulky and don't look good. Mm-hmm. And I want to make them smaller, but no, they're 1.5 inches. It really depends on the project, mm-hmm. I guess is what I'm saying. For what different material thickness is used for.
5/4, for whatever reason here around these parts is a rarity. For whatever reason, everything's, you know, 4/4, 6/4, 8/4. So typically what I'm buying is 8/4 a lot of times and 6/4 if I can get my hands on it. I almost never get 4/4 just because I really feel hamstrung by using 4/4 a lot of times. I end up feeling as though I need just a little bit more meat when I'm buying rough sawn lumber to get even to that 1 inch mark. I do use 3/4 material sometimes, but more often than not, things end up being either 7/8 or 4/4. I'm right there with you. I made my old dining table, which is a walnut table with some curved stretchers on it. And the stretchers are 7/8, almost 1 inch thick. And the tabletop is 3/4 inch thick. And it just was not correct. It was all wrong in all proportions, right? Because now you've got this base. It's just, you know, all the pieces, all the slats and everything are 7/8, almost 1 inch thick. Some of the pieces are laminated. And then you got this tabletop that's just, it looks super thin, especially with an under bevel on it. It just doesn't look right. And I'm right there with you, Guy, that all things considered, knowing what I know now, I probably would have redone it and did it differently. but I was, you know, very fresh in my woodworking. Most of the time, a lot of time, I'm sticking with 6-quarter and 8-quarter material. And if it's 8-quarter material is all that I can get my hands on, then I'll resaw it and save the offcuts for veneering or drawer sides or whatnot, drawer boxes. And I'll just deal with that offcut later, because I'd rather have thicker material that I can resaw and work with than having thinner material and just feeling really kind of confined with just working with that thinner material. That's how I've been doing it now, probably for about 4 years. Yeah. Brian, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, the only time I really find a need to get material thicker than 5-quarter is if I'm doing legs.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
Other than that, I mean, I don't want 8-quarter boards in my shop. I don't want an 8-foot long, 10-inch wide, hard maple 8-quarter board. That thing weighs 800 pounds. I don't want to be lugging that crap around.
Well, you know, I'm young. No, I'm kidding.
it's not a matter of that. It's just convenience.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I understand. I understand. I think for me, I just like having that bigger board or thicker board so that I don't feel like I'm confined to having to always go with, you know, 3/4 inch or an inch, because like I said, it is hard to get 5-quarter material here. And if I could get more 5-quarter material, I would.
Here it's the sweet spot.
Yeah. I would agree with you. I think I would, if I had access to 5-quarter, I'd probably get that a lot more.
Yeah. The advantage to starting with lumber that's at least 5-quarter is you can then resaw that and still yield, you know, 3/8 to 1/2 inch out of the two remaining boards that you're getting after. Yeah. So trying to resaw a 4-quarter board and get, you know, much more than, you know, 1/4 or 5/16 out of it is really hard. And at that point, lumber that then is, you know, has limited uses.
Yeah.
So it depends a little bit on what you like to build, Ivan. If you're into, you know, small boxes or, you know, smaller things, maybe you can get away with some of that. Mm-hmm. The other advantage to starting with the thicker lumber and then resawing is the consistency in color and grain. So you get the opportunity to either book match or, you know, maintain consistent color throughout a table. I've got a table in my house that I used two different walnut that I think I must have acquired at two different times. And one leg on this table just stands out as clearly coming from a different batch of lumber than the other. So that said, it is nice to have, you know, a readily available stack of, you know, 4-quarter material that can be milled down for smaller parts or jigs or, you know, just miscellaneous odds and ends as needed. So,
yeah.
All right.
Is it back to me?
Yep.
All right. So this is from Mark Moeller, and he's from Danville, Indiana. Look at that. Another native to you guys.
Yeah.
Thanks for taking my question. I only recently started listening to your podcast, so I'm way behind, but looking forward to listening to all the great episodes. Well, thank you. Thank you very much, Mark. I have a 16-foot PVC board. It's 8 inches tall, 3/4 inch thick, 16 feet long, that needs an edge profile added. The edge profile needed is to mimic a skirt board. This board installs at the bottom of an exterior siding. I purchased the 6-inch wide boards with the profile cut by the manufacturer, but they did not have an 8-inch, so I'll need to cut this myself. The profile is a 1/4-inch tongue that is 1 inch in length with a 45-degree cut underneath. This allows a skirt board to slip underneath the bottom row of siding, the 1/4-inch section that is, and still have the rain water drip off on the 45-degree portion. How would you cut this profile? I'm thinking on a router table, but appreciate your input. So there are a couple ways that you can do this. In fact, actually, you could do all this on the table saw, though it might be a little bit cumbersome to do that. First off, to make that cut, that quarter inch groove or tongue on the backside of this board, you could do it with a dado stack on your table saw. You could do it with a tenoning bit or straight bit on the router table. You could use a tongue and groove bit, or not tongue and groove, excuse me. You could use a rabbiting bit on the router table. Personally, me, I would probably use a router table on all of this and use a rabbiting bit. The one concern that I do have is that I'm wondering if there's a big enough rabbiting bit to get that 1 inch length for that quarter inch tongue on the back of your PVC board. And then use a 45 degree chamfering bit for that 45 degree angle on the top profile for this skirt board. Guy, what do you think? How would you go about doing this?
Router table.
Router table all the way?
Yep.
Okay. And
those boards are really flexible and...
Yeah.
I
good work holding.
16 feet long.
It's going to be a pool noodle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pool noodle.
I'd probably use a router table.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Good feather boards. Good feather boards, good hold.
I think I can get a lot more control over a board that long on the router table than I could on the table saw.
Yeah. Right on.
Use good infeed and outfeed support just to stabilize it, since you're going to need 32 feet of length to take your 16 feet in and your 16 feet out. So make sure you've got a couple points of contact leading in and on the back side of it, because that board's going to want to flex down as it becomes unsupported, and it's going to try to lift it off your table.
Yeah.
As a result. So feather boards down, feather boards to the side. In feed and out feed should be good. Yeah.
We got consensus on that. Router table all the way, huh? Hey, look at that. Router table day. It's a router table question day. Both questions of mine, router tables.
Yeah.
All right, Brian, you got the next one, man.
Okay. And this question is from Evan. And Evan says that he has a family dinner table project on the horizon. He says, I haven't felt like my woodworking really justifies a joiner yet. I don't generally mind using a planer sled to get flat faces and a joiner sled on the table saw to edge joint my boards. But I've never tried to use these methods on long stock, anything over 4 feet. Mm-hmm. With that being said, this dinner table project that is looming ahead of me seems like it might be the moment to finally take the plunge and buy a joiner. Do you think it is possible to get the tabletop glue ready without a joiner? I trust my planer sled to get flat faces, but I'm wondering if you think edge joining such long boards is possible with an extra long table saw joiner sled jig. Any tips on milling and glue up for this tabletop would be very appreciated. He has a part two, but we'll save that for maybe the next podcast. So Evan, you'll have to stay tuned there. I don't have any concerns about using an edge joining jig on the table saw on a board longer than 4 feet. You know, let's say he's making a 6 foot or 6.5 foot long, maybe even a 7 foot long table. I mean, you're going to need to make sure that you've got a long enough jig, of course, to clamp that to. But mm-hmm. I don't see any reason, as long as you're maintaining good pressure against the fence and your board is securely fastened to your edge joining jig for the table saw, I don't have any concerns about getting a glue ready joint for that. I have maybe a follow-up idea for the end, but why don't I turn it over to you, Wei, to provide any perspective, any tips on milling and glue up for this tabletop?
I've never had experience using a jointer edge jig on a table saw to do this. I've always had a joiner. That being said, I don't think it should be an issue so long as you have a long enough jig and so long as the rip fence is long enough and straight enough and parallel enough to the saw blade to get that task done. Mm-hmm. My only concern is that as you're feeding it in, if whether or not at the beginning, if whether or not you're having enough reference edge to the rip fence to get that nice straight cut. In that instance, I might get some type of a piece of aluminum extrusion or something that is a little bit longer than the rip fence itself to get a little bit more of a reference edge to your jig itself. Does that make sense? Yeah,
that's a good idea.
Yeah. That's the only, and I actually do have a piece of extruded aluminum that I've saved. I think it's like something like 5.5 feet long that I use as an auxiliary fence for those instances where I really need a long reference edge to in conjunction with my rip fence, if that makes sense.
Good idea. Yeah. I probably need to get one of those too. That makes sense.
Yeah. For whatever reason, when I was using a bunch of aluminum extrusion to make the fence on my miter saw station, I somehow ordered a second piece that was very long, the 5.5 feet long, and I just kept it. I didn't return it. So, and I used that as a reference fence for, or auxiliary fence for my rip fence. Yeah. Guy, any experience with this and any tips that you might give him?
If the boards are long enough, I don't know if I'd use the table saw with the sled. I would use a router with a straight edge.
Mm. Okay. Okay.
And do it that way.
You've got
especially
a video.
If you have like a festool track, you could use that. Those are pretty straight. Mm-hmm. As you said, an aluminum extrusion, or get anything that just has a known straight surface.
Yeah.
It could be a piece of MDF.
Sure, sure.
And you're saying clamp.
Use that and put it on, clamp it on top, and then use a straight bit on the router and from the edge.
And not you're saying not the router table, the taking the router to the workpiece.
Handheld router. Yep.
How big of a bit would you use for that guy?
Depends like on what how thick the wood is.
Let's say he's working with 5/4 stock.
Okay. I've got a bit that's, you know, inch long and a half long.
Yeah. Inch and a half long. What diameter would be?
Half inch.
Like, is there a
half you inch? Say half inch? Quarter. Okay. It doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
It could be a quarter inch. Doesn't matter. You're only taking off like maybe a 1/16 of an inch.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the thicker the bit, the better. So 1/2 inch, 3/4 is what I'd recommend. Yeah. Myself, I would use I've got a wide side compression bit. And that's
what I see. Because you're, yeah, okay. For whatever reason, I pictured there being an offcut to this, but you're saying is you're just kissing the edge.
I'm just kissing the edge. And I'm just getting it straight. I'm running through the table saw and then I'm cleaning it up with the router.
Okay.
If I'm that concerned about it.
And taking that little bit of material, you're going to get a pretty good clean cut too.
Yep.
Yeah.
As opposed to like what you might be thinking, Brian, is if you were taking too much, then you might get some, get some chip out and whatnot.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Really fine. Yeah.
It's very hard on even a 4 or 6 foot board to get a completely straight edge on the table saw.
Yeah.
It always seems to move a little bit or do a little bit. It's not joint ready.
Yeah.
I don't think.
Yeah.
I've tried the whole, straight line rip blades or what is it? Glue line rip blades. And I've never had it perfectly ready for glue.
Yeah. I haven't had luck with it.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Yeah. The other tip or advice, Evan, that I would have is consider gluing up your top in sections that are within the boundary of your planer. And that way, to the extent that, you know, your face joining leaves, you know, imperfections in that glue line, you know, where one board is maybe rising a little higher than the other, that you can run that back through and just start it thicker than it needs to be and give yourself the room to work your way down to your final thickness. Takes a little longer that way, but yep. For me, it's a more stress-free way of doing it.
Yeah. Anytime I've tried to get everything all flat and faced and edged all at once, I've always had to take off more and I regretted it.
Yeah.
Good point, Brian.
Yeah.
Yep.
And the other option for the old school woodworkers out there is to also have a joiner plane handy. And you can use a hand plane to kind of clean up any areas that are a little out of square, or out of flat. So,
Guy, you got the last one, man.
All right. This comes from Parker. I think we took one from Parker before too, didn't we?
Yeah, I think so. I think we did. Yeah.
Yes, we did. All right. So he says he wants to build a cherry coffee table for the house. He's got a couple of chair pieces I've made, and I really love watching them darken and get more beautiful with age, just like me. The other pieces I've made don't really see much direct blasting sunlight, so the process is subtle. The coffee table, however, will get some direct morning sunlight every day, and I'm worried about the uneven color change and sun shadows on the top where there would be decorative objects or books or things left in one spot for a period. That's absolutely correct. Mm-hmm. If I pre-darken by leaving it in the sun for some hours or a day or two, will that slow the process enough to alleviate this? If so, should I do it before or after finishing? Is there anything else I can do to help besides not putting stuff on the top, of course? Well, Parker, the thing that will help is not to put anything on the top if the sunlight's going to hit it, because it's always going to darken with age. And if you prevent one area from getting UV exposure to the other areas, it's going to change a little bit. It's not going to be the same.
Even if you pre-darkens?
Yes. I've pre-darkened stuff out in the sun on my deck mm-hmm. quite a few mm-hmm. times, and it does work really well, and I do it before I finish. Mm-hmm. And it does work really well. It really gets rid of that pinkish color that sure. cherry can have. Yeah, I deal with the same thing. I have a cherry coffee table that I built that's in my family room. And, you know, my wife has certain things she puts on there. And there's a couple spots where there's, you know, it's lighter in some areas than the other, because there's a window that's right near it and sunlight hits it, you know, in the mm-hmm. afternoon. And it's just the way it is. But it's kind of like part of the charm of the thing too. So, yeah. It's something to be aware of, mm-hmm. but myself, it's nothing I would obsess over. I would get, you know, put it out in the sun, pre-darken it, I actually use a darkening agent, which is the potassium chromate or whatever the heck it is. And that does a good job. What about you, Lee? Yeah. What do you do with cherry?
I've never dyed cherry.
I don't dye it either. But
I've never dyed it. I've never pre-darkened it. I've never come into an issue with it. However, that is a thing, because I'm looking at a cherry desk that I'm sitting at right now, and one end of it is lighter than the other end of it because of where the sun hits it. I don't care. I actually kind of like it. I think it's kind of neat, and I can appreciate it. My dogs and my children are going crazy, so I apologize, because my life is filled with a lot of people in my house and dogs. So I don't mind it so much. I actually appreciate it. And I could care less, because I kind of like it. But does potassium dichromate change the way in how the cherry quote unquote patinas with light? Does it help with that, or does it still? No. Okay. So while it while it still changes the color of the cherry, there's still going to be lighter and darker spots if it is in direct sun. Okay. See, I was thinking that even if he did do potassium chromate, I thought that maybe using potassium dichromate would even out that color and prevent it from patinaing or changing color with direct sunlight.
Yeah, when I put the potassium dichromate on there, I make it so it's dark.
Yeah.
So it looks like it's been sitting in a house for 20, 30 years.
Right. Okay.
I'm just not putting a very light coating on it just to darken it a little bit. I mean, I'm darkening it.
Okay. Okay.
Do you do that before you apply? You obviously do that before you apply finish, but is that when it's like ready to be finished, or are you still sanding and working it after applying?
Well, it's for our listeners who don't know what it is, potassium dichromate is a chemical you mix with water and you put it on cherry, and it will darken it. And it can, depending on how much you put and the percentage of the solution, it can darken it quite a bit.
Right.
When you put that on, it's dissolved in water, so it raises the grain.
Yeah.
You have to remember that stuff is a known carcinogen.
Mm-hmm.
So yes. when you put it in always add the chemical to the water, never water to the chemical. Put it in there. Make sure you have a respirator on, because you don't want the particles going in the air. You don't want to breathe them in. Mm-hmm. You put it on, and when you sand it, you got to do the same thing. You got to wear a particulate mask.
Okay.
Because you don't want that stuff in the air and you don't want to breathe it in. I mean, for it to actually cause cancer, you'd have to be working with it every day, 4 or 5 hours a day, for it to really make a difference, I think. You know, just once in a blue moon isn't that dangerous. Right. So, yeah, you have to put it on, and then you have to sand afterwards because it raises the grain.
Sure.
Okay.
But I would sand it first. You know, I always pre-raise the grain before I sand. Mm-hmm. I'll sand it to where I want to get it, and then I'll put the stuff on, and then I'll do just a lot. It doesn't raise the grain that much because it's already pre-raised. Mm-hmm. So I'll scruff sand it a little bit, and it does a good job flattening it out.
Yeah.
I don't mind a little imperfection in a piece of furniture. To me, it makes me feel more comfortable using it. And, you know, I want to own the table and not have the table kind of own me.
Own you.
Yeah. Sometimes it does hurt after putting that much care into something to see it get that first ding or that mark of imperfection. But I actually find that once it happens, find myself able to appreciate it and enjoy it more. So
kind of sigh of relief. Okay. Finally.
Yeah.
All right. Does that answer the question, I guess?
I think so. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
All right. So what do you got going on in the shop, Wade?
Oh, man. So I applied dye to all a china cabinet, again, because that's all I ever work on. China cabinet, walnut. I applied the dark walnut dye, aniline dye, with denatured alcohol. And it raised the grain a lot more than I was expecting. And so I watched one of Jeff Jewett's videos, and he was implying that after he applies dye, he goes over it with a 4-0 steel wool Scotch-Brite pad. And so that's actually what I did, and it made a huge difference and made it so much better. So everything is dyed, and I also got the first couple of coats on all the interior parts of the china cabinet with. And so it's looking great. And I think by tomorrow, because I'm going to go out there and do a little bit more shellacking, not the beaten up, but the actual apply of shellac, apply shellac to the interior and get it ready for assembly. I think by tomorrow, I think I'm going to do some assembly tomorrow. Finally.
That's exciting.
Yeah.
This one's been going for a while.
A year. Yeah. So I'll do the assembly of the carcass and all the interior shelving that's like dovetailed in, well, sliding dovetails and whatnot, and get that done by tomorrow. I've got a buddy of mine coming over tomorrow to do it, and I'm going to be doing it on a big piece of melamine because my workbench is not long enough to support this china cabinet. So I've got a big piece of melamine. Actually, it's the melamine that I use as a platen for large veneer projects that I have in two halves. So I'll be using that big piece of melamine on my workbench as the work surface to assemble this thing. How about you, Brian? What do you got going on, man?
Not a whole lot right now. It's a busy season for the Schmidt family, so haven't had a whole lot of time in the shop, but getting ready to just book two client jobs. So going to be working on a residential office built in, and then a kind of a little bench seat that was previously carpeted in somebody's basement, and they took that out and they want to replace it with a nice wood top. So just kind of a shallow bench top that's going to sit on top of this batten board frame they've got down there. So that's not a very good description of it. It's a fairly basic, simple project, but be a good reason to make a little bit of sawdust. So
yeah, you guys are getting in the heart of baseball season for your family, isn't it?
Well, we've got a golfer right now. So we've got a middle school golfer, and then our son is in off season quarterback football practice and training, goodness, all that stuff. And then our daughter does cheer or gymnastics, basically. So a lot of different things, but we're enjoying it. Yeah. What about you? What's going on in your shop?
Nothing.
Nothing.
No, I got too many projects going on around the house. I don't have any time for it, really. My wife keeps me really busy.
Yeah. Well, good.
So,
oh, you should be. Yeah. Oh, the other thing, it's not going on in my shop yet, but I think I'm getting a lathe.
What?
Yeah.
Big one, small one. What are you getting?
I think I should know this. It's a used lathe. It's a Nova 1624-44, I think.
Oh, a Nova. That's a nice lathe, man.
Yeah. It's I'm really concerned that I'm gonna get bit by the wood turning bug, and I'm gonna just disappear into turning for the rest of my life. But we'll see.
Nah, see how it goes. Your kids are gonna keep you busy. Don't worry about that.
Yeah.
That's what that is.
Yeah.
So. All right. Well, I think that's gonna do it for the show. And we would like to thank everyone who left us a 5-star review on iTunes. It really does help us in the search rankings. And of course, we truly appreciate the support and feedback. So please remember, this podcast is here to answer questions from the woodworking community. So if you have any questions you would like answered, you can send them through the podcast contact page at woodshoplifepodcast.com or DM us through Instagram at woodshoplife. And I can be found on this podcast. Where can you be found at, Hui?
I can also be found on this podcast, but if you're looking on the internet, you can go to alabamawoodworker.com or just search for Alabama Woodworker. Brian, how about you?
You will only find me on this podcast. I don't do the social media, so just good here.
All right. Really good. We'll talk to you guys in a couple weeks.
All right. Talk to you in a couple.
Bye. All right.